Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Sunday evening. Joining me from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where he's there for Sixers Media Day on Monday, is Tim Bontops.
A new way to pronounce my last name. I did say that weird.
I'm sorry. And it's late.
Nothing to be sorry about. Just amusing.
Tim Bontops.
Hello, Brian. Hello,
Tim Bontemps.
There you go. We got that.
It was like sort of the half French, half American pronunciation is what that was. Joining us from Memphis, Tennessee, where he's just flown in. He's going to be at, I'm here in Boston for media day for the Celtics tomorrow. Something went down here today. But joining us from Memphis, Tennessee, where he's going to be at Grizzlies media day on Monday, it's Bam McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I would say that the three of us, I've probably got the distant third most interesting media day. You certainly got some action there in being down windy. And Bontemps, there wasn't a whole lot of action in Philly, which is going to make for interesting. But, somebody got better today.
Yeah, so just FYI, we got Ramona Shelburne coming on a little bit later in the podcast to talk about the 76ers because she did a couple of stories recently. But obviously, the Boston Celtics win the Derby for Drew Holiday. I'm not sure exactly where all the offers were at the end for the Blazers before they decide on the Celtics offer. But based on my conversations, my feel was there was at least three teams who were making significant bids. And the reason it was three and the teams that I really think were there at the end were the Celtics, the Heat, and the Clippers. And the reason I think those three teams were there is because I think that those are the three teams that Drew Holiday was really focused on, you know, at some point being able to sign a longer term contract for. And that message kind of went out in recent days. Other teams made offers, but I think it was sort of a three-team aggressive race at the end. Like I said, only the Blazers know exactly what the offers were. But the fact, Bontemps, that the Celtics had to put two rotation players in Malcolm Brogdon and Robert Williams, two valuable players for them, plus two first-round picks. The Warriors pick that they picked up is part of the Kristaps Porzingis deal, shipping out Marcus Smart over the summer, 2024 first, and their own 2029 first, which I think is unprotected.
Mm-hmm. It is.
To give two rotation players and two first-round picks for a player who's 33 years old and the end of his contract, they paid a premium, and they got a premium player. And so the Celtics win the Derby, and what a big move for Boston that they probably didn't see coming a week ago. They probably didn't spend this summer preparing to have this particular team, but that's what happened. Drew Holiday is a Celtic, and he'll be here the next day or two. And I am interested to see tomorrow what everybody says about their summer.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the Celtics are the big winners of this week. And I think they go into media day to me as the clear favorites to win the title. I think when you look at the way this week is shook out, if you go back to Wednesday, like Wednesday morning, we all woke up. Nobody thought Drew Holiday was going to be anywhere but Milwaukee, outside of a couple people in Portland, a couple people in Milwaukee who knew what was going on with that. And now you fast forward 5 days later, Damian Lillard's in Milwaukee. Drew Holiday is now on the Celtics, a better version of Marcus Smart, who they traded away to get Kristaps Porzingis in the door a few months ago. And you look at the Celtics team now, their top six, in my opinion, is the best in the league, with Derek White and Drew Holiday in the backcourt, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum in the front court. Then you got Kristaps Porzingis and Al Horford at center. They can play a lot of different ways. They're going to be, I think, unstoppable on offense with all five of those guys on the perimeter with either one of those centers, both really good three-point shooters. And, you know, the Celtics have been knocking on the door now for the last several years. And I think over the past 7 years, in that seven-year span, I think they've won more games than any team that's ever not won a title in that long a time in the history of the league. And they've got this year and next year to win a title before they have to really start making some hard decisions from a financial standpoint when Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are both on supermaxes and they're skyrocketing past the second apron. That's not a place they're going to be able to be for very long. So to me, by going out and getting Drew Holiday, arguably the best player in the league to guard Damian Lillard, this team is now set up to go up against anybody in the league. And yeah, they're not perfect. They're a little bit thin up front. They lost Grant Williams this summer. Certainly that could loom large later on. He's always done a decent job guarding Giannis. They could have trouble in a matchup with Milwaukee guarding Giannis. But to get Jrue Holiday right now and add him to this team, I mean, yes, they lost two rotation players, but we all know they were trying to move Malcolm Brogdon throughout the summer. They're not upset that they're able to move on from him. Robert Williams, I don't know if we're going to see the same guy who was probably the best defensive player in the league from mid-January to the end of March in 2022 before he hurt his knee right before the playoffs. But obviously a talented player. But when you've got Al Horford and Chris Porzingis, he's a guy you can move. And I think when you look at this move, to me, this was a no-brainer for the Celtics to do it. It's a good haul for Milwaukee. Obviously, the overall Dame trade looks pretty good for them right now. But I think it's just a massive move for the Celtics to get this done and, to me, put themselves back ahead of Milwaukee in the race in the East going into training camp.
Yeah, you meant a good haul for Portland, obviously. I don't think it's clear that they are the favorites. I disagree with you on that. You know, I don't feel like arguing about it. I still think that Milwaukee is right there. If you want to talk about best top sixes in the league, Bobby Portis being your sixth man with their starting five, I think that's a conversation. But I agree with everything you say as far as Jrue Holiday being a phenomenal fit. And basically, this is, in a lot of ways, it's not like it was planned, but this is an extension or set up by the trade that brought Kristaps Porzingis to Boston, sent Marcus Smart to Memphis, obviously a three-way deal with Washington. That's how they got that 2024 Warriors pick. That was one of the
picks. Real quick, I just want to do a quick accounting. I didn't want to interrupt you, but let's just a quick accounting. Start of the summer to the end of the summer. Celtics out Marcus Smart, out one first round pick, out Malcolm Brogdon, out Robert Williams. That's what they went out. I know they traded two picks today, but they traded one of their picks that they had at the start of the summer. So Smart, Brogdon, Williams, one first, brings back Kristaps Porzingis and Jrue Holiday. If I had told you that trade in July 1st, I think that would have been very well approved. And then for Damian Lillard, the Bucks they've gotten three firsts, two swaps. We'll see what happens with Malcolm Brogdon, but they picked up DeAndre Ayton, who obviously is what they see as a core player, and Robert Williams, two bigs that it sounds like they're going to keep. And then we'll see what happens with what they get for potentially swapping Brogdon. Sorry, but McMahon, go ahead.
That's fine. And the Jrue Holiday fit is perfect, simple. He'll start next to Derek White. They'll be probably the best defensive backcourt in the league.
I don't think there's any question about that. Yeah, the only question I think is if he actually starts, because I do think there's a world where I think there's a world where Al Horford starts and Derek White doesn't. Okay. I'll be interested to see what they do with that. But when those two guys are on the court, which I think they're going to be when they close games, those are two of the five best defensive guards in the league. It's a ridiculous defensive backcourt.
Yeah, and they can share the playmaking duties. Obviously, Tatum's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. I think they don't have to rely on Brown maybe as much to be a initiator as they did in the past. I have no doubts about Holiday's fit. I still am a little curious about how Porzingis is going to fit there. And, Porzingis in the past, he has not been content to be even a distant second offensive option. And now, what is he, the fourth?
The third?
Right. I think he's the fourth, but whatever. And then just defensively, when he's good, he can be a good rim protector, but you're definitely not doing a lot of you can't do hardly any of the stuff that you could do with Robert Williams in terms of switchiness. Horford, even at his age, is very switchy. So they're going to have to, they are going to have to scheme defensively to protect Porzingis. But hey, it's a team that was already a contender that I think they can certainly be confident that they were going to or that they got better this offseason. Their depth obviously took a hit, but they increased their chances to win a championship. That's for sure.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
The NFL schedule drops this week, and you can be there to catch all the action live and in person with Vivid Seats. Experience every touchdown, every tackle, every eye-popping play of your favorite team. And to kick it off, Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN, is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP. Download the app or visit vividseats.com today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. So there's been a lot of attention paid the last few days to Drew Holiday, and people point out that his trying to justify Milwaukee's trade was that, you know, Milwaukee obviously with Dame Lillard gets a finisher, a end of game finisher, and yeah, also that Drew Holiday's shooting in the postseason took a dip from his regular season numbers. It was sort of, you know, backing up, you know, it's for some reason, for some people it was like, well, this is a reason why you shouldn't trade for him because his shooting has historically gone down in the playoffs. Let me tell you what hasn't gone down. His assist to turnover ratio. He's over 3-1 assist to turnover his career in the playoffs. You know, Jaylen Brown's is? It's 1-1. It's 1-1. There's certain games where it feels like it's 1-3. So you're talking about not only what he brings just defensively, but he's a stabilizing guy with the basketball at the end of games. And that's huge for the Celtics. Huge for them. To be able to have that, to not only have that guy that they can deploy in their defense, and you know, they just weren't as good defensively last year for a lot of different reasons, and bringing him in makes a huge difference. The other thing is, I feel like by doing this, the Celtics send the message that they have truly gone for it. Now, maybe their leadership would dispute that they've actually gone for it in the past, because ever since Brad Stevens took over as team president, he has made aggressive moves. He's traded away, what is it, Bontemps? Is it 4 firsts now that he's traded away since he became president?
Traded a first to get Al Horford, traded a first to get Malcolm Brogdon. They traded 2 firsts. I mean, I guess in the aggregate, maybe it's 3 firsts, but either way, they've made a trade each of the 3 years.
They traded away a swap.
That traded a swap for Derek White, maybe a first two in that deal. I mean, they went from never trading picks under Danny Ainge to trading a bunch of picks.
Right. So they've been getting closer to it, but now they are a second apron team, And I will say this, something that's interesting to point out, you know, the second apron rules, as we've talked about, and they're kind of wonky, but not all of the rules are in play right now. One of the rules that is not in play is that if you're a second apron team, in the future, you're not going to be able to aggregate players together to trade them. So you can't put, like, the deal, for example, that Milwaukee made where they piled all those players together to get Dame Lillard. You know, obviously.
Or the one Holiday the Celtics made for Drew Holiday. They couldn't make that trade either.
Both of those trades. And by the way, Miami potentially would have been in trouble for the second apron if they had structured a trade a certain way. And the Clippers would have been in trouble. So these two trades that just happened this week, Lillard and Drew Holiday, if those teams were second apron teams a year from now, they wouldn't be able to make those trades. And it would have been another team.
Yeah, even more reason to be that aggressive now.
Exactly the point, McMahon. I was actually talking to a GM on Friday, and they said, you know, a year from now, if this exact same situation unfolded, first of all, if Dame Lillard wouldn't have gone to the Bucks, I don't know where he would have gone. Mm-hmm. But Jrue Holiday probably ends up in a place like Utah. Utah was a team that was sniffing around. I don't know if they made a formal offer, because you say they make an offer and next thing you know, your phone's ringing. Utah was sniffing around on Jrue Holiday. And for various reasons, it didn't get done. A year from now, Utah might be able to get Jrue Holiday. Right. And you have definitely a more, in this type of situation, you have a, you're going to have a more spread out of talent. So that's even more reason, you know, for, as you mentioned, for the Bucks and the Sixers to, or the Celtics to do this. So that's a couple of things I want to point out. I also think that, you know, Bontemps, the Celtics, when you discuss their 2-year window here, so they've signed Jaylen Brown to the Supermax extension, but it doesn't kick in this year. It'll kick in next year. Next summer, Jason Tatum, I assume, is signing for $300 million. He's already qualified mm-hmm. for it. Nothing needs to happen. I assume he's taking $300 million. But then he still has another year before that Supermax kicks in. So when you say 2 more years, the reason you're saying that is that that's when Jaylen Brown, what is that, like $58 million or something like that? I think the two of them
will
together,
be combined to make over, they'll be making over $100 million together in the 25-26 season. That's right, that's then, when the crunch starts.
And then Porzingis is going to be on the books for 30-something.
Right, and Derek White has to get it. You know, he's nearing the end of his deal. He's extension eligible.
And Jrue Holiday, Holiday will all but certainly, I would think, agree to some sort of extension later this season with the Celtics, and he'll be on the books too.
Right. So my point is that, like, while I'm sure the Celtics can present, like, if Mike Zarin were here, he could present a whiteboard. Mike Zarin's a Celtics lead executive under Brad Stevens. He could probably have a whiteboard explaining why they have, you know, been aggressive in the past, and, you know, my eyes would glaze over. But in this particular situation, the Celtics are in position to do something they couldn't do in the future, and with what their salaries are, their window is tightening, and so the risk reward situation is not just black and white. It's a little bit more clear. And that's why they went for this now, Bontemps. And that's why I think it led to this moment.
No question. I mean, this is the moment for them to go for it. And we, you know, we talked about it a little bit before, but both Malcolm Brogdon and Robert Williams, there's no guarantee you're going to have either of those guys on the court. They're both injury question marks. There's already injury question marks and age question marks without Horford or Kristaps Porzingis. Getting Jrue Holiday, another rock solid guy who's going to be on the court all the time, who's shown he could play huge minutes in the playoffs. You're going to be able to roll out there with those four perimeter players playing 38, 40 minutes a game in the playoffs on a regular basis. You're going to be in awfully good shape. So, I mean, look, I love the trade for Boston. I think from a drama and a theater standpoint, the fact that in the span of 5 days, Jrue Holiday went from Milwaukee to Boston, and now theoretically could be guarding Damian Lillard in the conference semifinals or the conference finals in a 7-game series is just an unbelievable storyline mm-hmm. that we now have to follow. And yeah, I mean, the Celtics have 2 years. They have 2 years to win, and they've been knocking on the door for a decade. It was a decade ago that they made the trade with the Nets to get all those picks that became Jason Tatum, became Jaylen Brown. And they've been trying to win Banner 18 for 15 years, since 2008. And they haven't won it. And they might not have a better chance in the next 2 years. And so this is the move to me. The second that the Damian Lillard trade happened, I thought the Celtics had the best package of players between Brogdon, who they could spin off somewhere, Robert Williams, who they can either spin off, but it sounds like they're going to keep. And they have all their picks available. The Celtics still have all but one of their first-round picks in the future. They could still do more stuff if they want going forward. But they had the best package to make to get this guy ahead of the Clippers, ahead of the Heat. And it was a question of, are the Celtics going to really put those pieces in, or are they going to be content to sit with what they have? And
listen, don't you dare say someone's package is better than the Heat's if you want to walk in that media room in Miami. I'm going to tell you that right now. You better watch your words. You better be careful there.
Let me ask you. There's a lot of hurt feelings in South Florida this week. That's for sure. A lot of hurt feelings. Not within the Heat, I should say, but all around the American Airlines, whatever it's called now.
Yeah, I mean, like when Eric Spoelstra sits down to talk to the media, I mean, I'm sure Eric Spoelstra is not going to take a position like, oh, gee, Willikers. Like Eric Spoelstra is going to say, we have enough and we're going to try to win. We're going to get back to the finals. And I don't think see Pat Riley pout. I'm sure Jimmy Butler wanted Dame Lillard, but I don't think you'll see Jimmy Butler come out on opening night and think he ain't going to win.
Right.
The Heat, who, by the way, made the conference finals 3 of the last 4 years and are the finals 2 of the last 4 years. So I'd say they're doing just fine.
Yeah. And obviously one of the reasons that the Bucks got booted, there was a list of them. One of the reasons they got booted is because Jrue Holiday could not slow down Jimmy Butler. And he was still their best chance by far. So certainly that trade doesn't help that, but it does solve the other massive problem they had. And that's that their half court offense tended to get stuck in mud. And boy, that ain't going to happen anymore with Damian Lillard running things there. So hypothetical here, the Blazers and the Blazers, Bucks and Suns got this thing to the 1 yard line, and Joe Cronin, the Blazers GM, says to the Bucks GM, John Horst, hey, let's make this a 4-team deal. We're going to loop the Celtics in and reroute Jrue Holiday to Boston. What do you think Horst says?
No way.
And look, he knew when he made the trade it was a possibility. But this is like, God, please don't let this happen.
I'm sure the Bucks are sitting on the sideline going, Clippers, Clippers, send them the Clippers, Clippers, Clippers.
They did not want to see him in Miami. They did not want to see him in Boston. But you know that. Hey,
well, forgetting him Miami. This is the doomsday scenario for the Bucks. That was, like, this is the team you did not want him on.
Well, you're saying doomsday. The Bucks, the Bucks are very formidable. I you know, for sure. But
I'm not saying I'm not saying the Bucks can't win. I'm saying this is the doomsday scenario for the Bucks in this situation. They would have done just about anything to have him go to any of the, I think, 28 other teams in the league. This is the one team, especially, that you didn't want him on, I think, because this team stands in the way of them getting to the finals. And look, I think for me, the situation with Giannis, we'll see what he does over the next few weeks. We'll see if he extends. I don't think the situation is any different. I think they got to go out and win this year. And winning this year just got exponentially harder. Doesn't mean they can't do it, certainly. Not with Dame and Giannis. That's maybe the best 1-2 punch in the league. But Jrue Holiday on the Celtics, I mean, can you guys imagine if these two teams play in the playoffs and you've got Jrue Holiday going up against Damian Lillard? Like, I don't think you could pick a guy to guard Dame in the league than Jrue. We saw that. Brian, I believe you covered that playoff series several years ago when New Orleans played Portland. Didn't go very well for Dame.
Well, Dame's a more dynamic player now than he was then. But, yeah, if you're going to pick a guy.
He also wasn't running pick and roll with Giannis.
No, I'm not saying it's going to go the same way, to be clear. I just mean, like, if you're the Bucks, this is not a great sequence of events to have him wind up on your biggest rival.
If you're the Bucks.
No, I just mean post-trade, that's all.
Yeah, I mean, they're still celebrating the trade to get Dame, but this is, you did not want Jrue Holiday to be rerouted to Boston, and that's exactly what happened. How do we feel about the Portland haul now that we, and I shouldn't say it's final because there's more deals that want Brogdon's likely to get moved at some point, and we'll see what else happens. But 3 first round picks, a couple swaps, 2 starting centers, which is weird, 2 young starting centers, and Brogdon. How do you feel about that as a return for Damian Lillard after you know, he basically said, get me the hell to Miami?
It's more than I thought they would get for Dame a week ago. So I think that they've done a good job. Also, their young players that they had were all perimeter players. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Grant isn't really a young player. He's sort of in the middle in his prime years. But so now they have 2 young bigs that they can, in theory, have mature with their strong perimeter players. We'll see whether or not this team can have, you know, Simons, Sharp, and Henderson as a whether they stick together, but at least their roster is more balanced going forward. And it was a challenged position. It was a challenge position. And, you know, a year ago when we were, you know, whenever we see stalemates, it wasn't just a year ago, but whenever we see stalemates with players, typically something happens in the league, and we will say on this pod, well, maybe something will happen. You know, Matt Ishbia buys the team,
right.
Buys the Suns, for example. Giannis saying those words was something that happened that created sure that was. Opportunity for Portland. And so that's one of the reasons why it behooves you to slow play sometimes a trade, regardless of what people say.
Yeah.
And so Milwaukee's reaction opened the door for Portland. And so however you want to see how the negotiations went, right. Portland's strategy is verified, because this is a better deal than they could have gotten if they had just straight up did with Miami, regardless of what you want to say. And it's probably a better deal than they could have got if they had traded him anywhere on July 1st.
Yeah. And Dame clearly has hard feelings. I mean, he said as much to Chris Haynes. Things got messy from a personal standpoint. He says, you know, basically Cronin ignoring him, whatever. That's unfortunate, but Joe Cronin got the best deal that he could. Him waiting was smart. He was able to basically maximize the return by taking his time, and then some fortunate time and with the Giannis stuff. And I mean, the other thing, like, dude, Dame got his money, and he got a chance, a great chance to win a championship. To me, once you take the money, you don't get to give a one team list and be upset that one team isn't where you got sent. That's like, don't take an extension if you are going to, you know, feel obligated to pick your team, your one and only team. And honestly, like, as far as backlash to the Blazers for the way things went down, what? So Portland's going to have to overpay for free agents? Whoa, ain't that something new? Well, I mean, you know, like at a certain point, hey, player empowerment, that's the way the league is. But you have to do what's best for your franchise. I think he did that while putting Dame in a good situation. As far as like what the Blazers have on their roster right now, I don't know that Ayton and Williams is a long-term tag team.
Oh, I will say this. It'll be interesting to see. I thought Nikola Jovic looked great in the World Cup. Just because he looked great in the World Cup doesn't mean he's going to look great for the Heat. He may not even be able to get minutes. There's a lot of excitement about Jaime Jaquez. Maybe he won't be that great.
Right.
But I will just say this from the Heat's perspective. If Jovic and Jaquez are looking awesome or looking with extreme potential, that is something that could be a lingering thing. If you end up with Ayton, who you kind of is a known commodity, and you have Robert Williams, whose value will fluctuate based on his health.
Right.
If Jovic is out there shooting 44% from three and just being a dynamic 6'10" guy who can play multiple different positions, and Jaquez is knocking people around and like making an impact as a rookie. Yeah. I mean, that could be judged. That could be used against Joe Cronin in the future. Yeah, but what's important is what we sit here and see right now.
Yeah.
The lay of the land right now.
Yeah, and there was not much interest in DeAndre Ayton. That's just a simple fact of the matter. I mean, he's viewed as a guy who's overpaid and is a lot to handle.
Well, I think one thing that, you know, our former colleague Mike Schmitz, who's the number two or one of his top top assists, he is a big believer in DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah,
and
he is a 7-foot.
I respect Mike Schmidt's opinion. He has been right about, you know, nobody bats 1,000,
sure. But
he has been right about a lot of players. And so I think what Schmidt's and apparently Joe Cronin believed is that DeAndre Ayton is potentially undervalued.
Yeah. And
you know, I do, you'd be right or wrong on that. That's, you know, it'll be what it'll be.
I do believe, and I know that Ayton and people close to him believe that he can benefit from a change of scenery. I just, again, Ayton, obviously you have to start DeAndre Ayton. I don't know. Like, what are you going to do? Are you going to play Williams? You're not playing them together. I mean, I guess you are if you don't care about winning, but like, that's not a fit. So what are you going to do? You're going to play Williams for 20 minutes? I'll say this. If Robert Williams is healthy as the trade deadline is nearing, I do believe there will be a robust market for him because he is the exact – first of all, he's got a very reasonable contract.
Yes.
And then he's the exact kind of big that a lot of really good teams want, and that's an impact defensive player who's an energy guy, who's a, you know, screener, finisher, rebounder, run the floor.
He's beloved in that. He was beloved in that Celtics locker room, wasn't he, Buntemps? I felt like.
Yeah, absolutely. He had a universally high Q rating in the Celtics locker room. Really good guy. Everybody liked him.
Well, everybody loves guys who do a whole bunch of dirty work and don't take many shots.
Yeah. Well, he was never looking for the ball too. I mean, look,
right. He's also happy-go-lucky type of guy too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or when he's looking for it, he's got his elbows above the rim, throwing it down and just that threat creates space for everybody. So yeah, guys are going to love that dude.
Yeah, I mean, the whole situation with the Blazers, how this played out, has been very interesting because it's you know, I don't know if the process was very good at a lot of points, but ultimately they gambled that somebody would panic. And what you said, Brian, when Giannis Antetokounmpo talked to Tanya Ganguly from the New York Times and said, you know, I'm not sure about the commitment of the team, we got to see where things are at. Well, a month later, Damian Lillard's on the Bucks. And if that interview doesn't happen, maybe this trade happens. Maybe. But I'm going to guess that it doesn't.
Well, there's that interview. Then there's the podcast appearance.
That's right. Like, and he also did the podcast.
I'm not kidding. Just to be clear.
Just to reinforce it.
Yes.
Yeah. But look, that was the strategy, right? Like, for whatever reason, they decided they weren't going to negotiate with the Heat. I don't know if that was the best way to handle things, but that's just basically how it went. They weren't going to do that. So they were waiting for somebody to step up with a bigger offer than what the Heat could have gave them, in theory. And ultimately, that's what they got. Like, this trade worked out really well. They got three firsts. They got two swaps. I'm with you, McMahon. That trade from both sides, you know, I totally respect Schmitz. He knows way more about the draft and prospecting with players than I do. You know, the DeAndre Ayton Yusuf Nurkic swap for both sides was a little confusing. I mean, that's the remnants of a bad contract that the Blazers gave out last year. And as we talked about ad nauseum the other day, which I don't need to get back into, the Suns saying it's not worth it to see if this thing can get improved anywhere with DeAndre. We got to get him out of here. So perhaps a change of scenery will be good for him, but it's a ton of money to take on in that situation. And, you know, we'll see what happens to Malcolm Brogdon. We'll see what happens to Robert Williams. There is a bit of a log jam, but at the end of the day, the Blazers got more than I thought they were going to get. And to put themselves in a position now, they got flexibility going forward. They've got some stuff they can move around. They have the year now to see whether Anthony Simons and Scoot Henderson can fit together, whether they got to move on from Simons at some point in the future or make him a six man. But they got time to do that because now the decks are clear. And at media day on Monday and training camp starting on Tuesday, they can put the ball in Scoot Henderson's hands and let him go. And that ultimately was what had to happen at the end of all this. This had to become Scoot Henderson's team. And now it is.
I will say this also. Go ahead, McMahon.
I was going to say, I think they need to move Brogdon pretty soon because I don't need to deal with a proud vet who is going to be less than content to put it this way. I don't want to read one damn story about Malcolm Brogdon as a mentor for Scoot Henderson.
No,
I suspect they'll. I don't know. This is with no knowledge. I suspect that's going to be handled like the Jrue Holiday situation. I would suspect they're going to look around. They're going to find some offers and they're going to do something pretty quick, I would think.
It's one thing to have a veteran go to a young team. It's another thing when that veteran is still in his prime years and is going to be a free agent. He's not like, nobody would blame him for being like, hey, wait a minute. I mean, if he was going to go there and be their starting point guard, okay. But he can't go there and have his actual value diminished. That he can't allow that.
Yeah, he still got 2 years left on his deal, to be clear. But
Oh, you're, that's right. He was, yeah.
But either way, it's like not, he's not going to be in Portland at the minimum past the trade deadline. I would certainly think sooner than that.
Well, and he sure as hell ain't going to try to defend his sixth man of the year title in, for a rebound.
Two things before we go. One, the preseason is never exciting. So I want to be clear. I'm not trying to sell you that. This preseason could have a little bit of intrigue because you're going to see the Celtics play with Porzingis. I'll check on Porzingis tomorrow. It'll be like the 11th thing I got to check on. Right. You know, hey, Jalen, what about
He's been scrimmaging and working out. I think he's, I don't know this with 100% certainty, but I believe he's going to be full go for practice on Tuesday. Seems that way, at least.
So you're going to see the new look Celtics. That's going to be going on. You're going to see the new look Bucks. That's going to be going on. You're going to see the new look Suns. That's going to be going on. You're going to see Victor Wembanyama. You know, his first preseason game is a week from Monday against Chet Holmgren. I have no idea whether the two of them are going to play, but keep an eye on what Victor is going to do in the preseason. There's actually
May or may not see James Harden. Where is he going to be? Ooh. What's going to happen in Philly?
Goodbye.
Yeah, next Sunday. Next Sunday, by the way, on ESPN. Forget the late NFL games. Celtics Sixers on ESPN. I'm sorry.
Can't wait.
Yeah, Celtics Sixers. Yeah.
Yeah, Celtics Sixers in Boston. Be there.
Yeah, the TD Garden is right out my window right now. As if I never left. The other thing I'm going to bring up is I do think, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't have done it for this reason. I do think that the Celtics are going to be on the lookout for another player or so because their depth took a hit here. Now you can say their top six is the best or among the best. After that, it gets a little shaky. You're relying on guys who are either unproven or you know.
I think that Reggie Bullock is going to be a nice minimum signing for somebody, and both Milwaukee and Boston, I'm pretty sure, will be interested in his services.
It's going to be interesting about the Bucks because they had a roster spot open. They used it today, Sunday, on campaign, who they signed. Right. They're now at 15 guys, and they don't exactly have a lot of picks. So I'm not sure what their salary right now, according to Bobby Marks, at 183 million, into the second apron. I'm not sure they're going to be cutting a guy to sign Reggie Bullock off the street.
Another guy who got like one breakfast taco in San Antonio.
Yes.
And moved on. And by the way, addresses their need for point guard depth.
Yes. No, you for know, sure. He'll be a solid fit for them as a backup point guard during the season for sure.
I'm not going to tell you Bullock is like an all NBA player or anything, but he's a solid defender who
he's a rotation player.
Yeah. Never hits a jump shot before Christmas, but is a respectable 3-point shooter and more than comfortable being the number five option on the floor.
Well, I will say this.
His shooting splits from like before and after New Year's every year of his career are truly insane. It goes up like 15 or 20%. It's unbelievable.
I'm telling you, every single year of his career. Santa brings his jump shot every single year.
It's unbelievable.
So if I'm not mistaken, and I apologize for not having every second apron rule totally nailed down, it's a preseason for all of us. I believe when the regular season starts, if you're a second apron team, you can't sign a bought out player.
I think that is if their salary pre-buyout was above the non-taxpayer mid-level.
Well, it is for Bullock, is it not?
No.
It's a combination. It's multiple things. It's the Tim's right. It's about how much they make, and it's also if you get cut before the season starts, which Bullock also got cut before the season started. If
he
got
cut
2 months from now, it would have been a different story potentially.
No, it wouldn't.
Well, it's probably one of the reasons why he got –
No, I said potentially. I'm agreeing with you. You're right. Yeah. I'm saying for like other players during the year, it would be an issue.
Bullock was a mid-level signing for the Mavericks, but the mid-level's gone up since then.
Ah,
right. Okay.
All right. So, look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that where Reggie Bullock goes is going to determine the balance of power. I'm just saying that the Celtics could probably use another. I mean, they're going to be counting on Sam Hauser, who is a guy who's just shown some things. They're going to be counting on O'Shea Brissett.
Peyton Pritchard is going to play a good amount of minutes for them.
I think they got some young options, but they certainly could use some depth.
Yeah, no, Reggie. I think Reggie Bullock could be a great fit for them. They have, I mean, right now they probably have Steve McCallum and Delano Banton fighting for a roster spot. I would think. I would guess they're going to be at 14 spots.
They did sign Wenyen Gabriel on Sunday.
Yeah, My guess is he'll make the team.
Yeah.
They have Lamar Stevens, who was with the Cavs last year, as a rugged defender on the wing. My guess is he makes a team. It's just a guess. But with what they've got as a roster, I think he makes sense. So, yeah, if you could have Reggie Bullock as a guy you could plug in there and hit spot-up threes and defend on the wing and give, you know, any night you have, you know, one of those wing players not playing, he could step in and play 30 minutes. Like, I think it makes a ton of sense. But as we all know, those kind of guys are valued all over the place. And I would think whenever he hit, I think he'll either – clear waivers Monday or Tuesday, I think it might be Tuesday, he's going to have a lot of suitors. So you know, I would think he'll be pretty in demand to see where he winds up. I mean, I'd have to look at Miami's roster. I mean, that's another place where he would make some sense given where other summer's gone. And I think they have a spot. They do have a spot that they could use too. I mean, he would make sense there. So be a lot of, looking to sign in.
A lot more to come on this. Appreciate you guys coming by. We will be talking to Ramona Shelburne here in a second.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Okay, joining us now, as promised, Ramona Shelburne, who has written two tremendously reported pieces about the Philadelphia 76ers this summer. And the Sixers have quite a big couple of days here as we see what happens to the organization. But Ramona, joining us from the Valley, Silicon Valley.
San Fernando Valley.
Why did I say Silicon Valley? Oh, my God.
Well, because I have my Stanford hat on, you know.
It's late. I know. I should be ashamed of making that mistake. But, you know, you are a Silicon Valley girl, too. But
yeah, I was there yesterday. It's okay.
Wearing her Stanford hat, former Stanford star softball player, and also a shirt that says, I believe in the Church of Baseball, which our producer Jackson does not know the reference. How many of our podcast listeners and our YouTube watchers know the reference, I believe in the Church of Baseball?
I am going to go with 30%.
Yeah. So it is a reference to the movie. I wonder, Jax, you don't have to answer, but have you looked it up? Do you know what we're talking about, or do you just not even care?
I've looked it up now.
Okay.
I have actually seen that movie. My dad forced that upon me at one point in time. Good movie.
But you just haven't memorized every word like Ramona and I.
I haven't seen it enough to have it down.
Yeah, the movie is Bull Durham, one of the all-time great sports movies.
The all-time great sports movie. Like, that's not up for
By the way, speaking of television shows about sports, do you find it interesting that Jeannie Buss in year two of the HBO show has leaned in, avowing, you know, and unfortunately it's been canceled, Winning Time. But Jeannie is now tweeting how much she likes the show,
She went on a podcast with the creators. Her new husband, Jay Moore, had a role this season in Winning Time. I mean, it's like the wall came down. You know, I don't want to make a Gorbachev reference, but that's what happened. Like, the wall came down. There was a sort of the Lakers just pretended winning time did not exist and were not happy about it for the whole first season. And then this year it was like, it's fun nostalgia.
Yeah, like I get why Jerry West was upset. I don't know if I would have like filed a lawsuit, but I understand why he was upset. I get it. I guess I get how my Magic was upset because, you know, it portrays him in a certain light, regardless of how true it is or not true, but whatever. But like Jerry Buss was the star of the show. Like he was, and like Jeannie was portrayed, maybe it wasn't her ideal light, but she was portrayed very positively. Yeah. And her dad, John C. Reilly, with an all-time performance as Jerry Buss. And he was awesome. Like there's no way you watch that. And I mean, unless you were one of Jerry Buss's former girlfriends or something, there's no way you watch that and are like, that guy isn't awesome. And so I'm actually kind of glad she leaned in. It was kind of, you know, maybe a little bit too late, but like,
here's what the thing that's hard. Okay. So year one, everybody was just upset that it would even existed, right? Like that they did it without them. And this is other people's version of history and not their own. And other people made money on this and you know, et cetera. Year two, I think people kind of got comfortable with it, leaned in. And then the absolute worst possible thing, if you're a Laker person, could happen is that the show got canceled with them losing to the Celtics. like nothing else. Like I'm sure season three would have covered what happens next, right? Where they come back and win. I mean, you know, that's just the nature of the Lakers-Celtics rivalry, right? They're tied right now, 17 each.
Right. Also,
like, they're stuck. But the show ends with the Celtics winning.
Yes. Also, Adrian Brody is Pat Riley.
Oh, my gosh.
Great stuff. Anyway,
great stuff. I mean, I don't know if it was all, you know, I don't know if it was all that Ryle said all that or did all that or whatever. But I do like the character arc of that. I did feel bad for Coach Westhead. That was not a flattering portrayal this year.
Yes.
Did happen.
Right. I was gonna say,
you know, it did happen.
Magic did shove him out. And, you know, like one of the greatest coaches of all time was born. And, you know, Jerry Buss did what he had to do, as he did throughout his whole time in that job. So I like it all. So, Ramona, you did two really good stories. One was on James Harden that we talked about 3-4 weeks ago. And last week you had a story come out on Josh Harris, who really is being known right now as the new owner of the Washington Commanders, but has owned the 76ers. They've been the controlling owner since 2000. What was it? 9 or 10?
11.
2011. And probably got the best price on an NBA team of the modern era. Certainly like Jerry Buss. I don't remember what he paid for the Lakers.
I think it was $66 million or something.
Okay. Like, arguably going to be the great, you know, the team is probably worth $7 or $8 billion. I don't even know, but like
at some point of the Lakers. What people forget about the Lakers purchase back then is they also got the Forum and the Kings and some land up in Fort Tejon. It was a crazy real. And then I think Jack Kent Cook got the Chrysler building. Like it was
wild.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure the Chrysler building is very valuable, but I think the Lakers are probably valued more.
Yeah.
But anyway, but here's what I think is fascinating. So you do this interview with Josh Harris, who, number one, has almost done no interviews before. Mm-hmm. And this interview, I assume, was in the works for a while. And right when you're about to do the interview, the James Harden situation blows up.
Yeah.
So like, that was an interesting situation
that
you must have been dealing with.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you how that happens is I think we had been talking about doing an interview with Josh Harris, like when he first bought the team, when he first bought the Commanders this spring. I mean, it was kind of in the spring is when it looked like it was coming together. And then in the July is when it finally closes. But I had Zoom dates on the books months in advance, right? And then this plan to go to the preseason game August 21st was months in advance. That was on the calendar because he's a busy guy, right? Like he was flying to, I think he was overseas for quite some time. He was back and forth to the Hamptons and Florida and Philly and all over the place. So like, it was hard to nail down any dates for him. I'm just home. Like I'm pretty easy to schedule with, right? Like I'm in LA. At some point I may go on a day trip. That's about it. So I was easy to schedule with. And we had these on the books and it was just, literally, the James Harden thing has been happening all summer long, too. Like, this has been happening since July 1st or June 30th, as it were.
Right. But when he, like, said, okay, I will have a reporter from ESPN come hang out with me during my first preseason game, he did not know that this reporter who mostly covers basketball, that James Harden was going to blow up and it was going to blow up. So, like,
so how did I handle that, is what you asked?
Well, and how did he handle it? And more, how did he handle it?
You know, he was actually fine. You know, he said essentially like, hey, I said to him, I go, listen, I'm going to ask you about Harden. Like, we're going to talk about that. But I won't make the whole interview about that because the story is about more than that. Right. And so at some point I'm not going to, you know, my tactic with it is always I'm trying to tell the whole story and the 10,000 foot story, because this is something I want you to look back on 5 years from now and pull things from or learn things about this guy that you don't know, or, you know, contextualize him in a way, because we all just woke up and he was like the largest holder of sports assets in America. I mean, it's like him and Stan Kroenke, pretty close neck and neck in terms of just aggregate.
Yeah. So just
value.
To go over real quick. So Josh Harris owns the 76ers. He owns the New Jersey Devils. He and, you know, with partners, he owns the Prudential Center, which is where the Devils play. The Nets played there 1 or 2 years. He owns, is the controlling owner of Crystal Palace, which is a team in the Premier League in England. It's a team in London. And he owns the Washington Commanders. He also owns a couple of other minor league
teams. Joe Gibbs Racing. He's got some stake there.
Yeah, he's got some other stuff that but those are sort of the biggies. And so the idea that he has an NFL team, an NBA team, an NHL team, an arena, and a Premier League team. Like, the only person who can come close to that is Stan Kroenke, who owns the LA Rams, the Avalanche, the Nuggets, Arsenal. He also owns a lacrosse league team. He owns the stadium, the SoFi Stadium, and he owns the Ball Arena. He's probably got other stuff that I can't remember. But, like, that's the only comparable.
Yeah, the Glazers are up there. Glazers, I guess.
Yeah, the Glazers.
Because the Knicks are really valuable, and the Rangers, Jim Dolan is up there. Yeah.
And the Sphere.
And the Sphere. By the way, you too at the Sphere is apparently amazing. But I think, like, in terms of this guy who has a very low profile, Josh Harris, like, you know, he's done a few interviews, mostly when I did a background check, you know, not like a background check, but when you do a scour, okay, you just read everything about the guy. Most things that come up are stories about him being a college wrestler, stories about him at Apollo Global Management and sort of how that fell apart, but also some of his best deals that he made to become a billionaire and be in position to own all these teams. And then there was a few stories when he bought the Devils of kind of who he was. There wasn't a lot when he bought the Sixers. He didn't do media back then. And I remember that was actually one of the first places I started, which was all of a sudden Josh Harris is everywhere. Josh Harris like bought the team in Washington and then called into a radio station a few minutes later and bought a round of beers for fans that were at a watch party there. Like now he's doing sports talk radio. Like he went from calling into.
Well, he also took a beating because the whole process thing went down and he was sort of absent for that. And they had,
Brett Brown. I mean, it was basically Brett Brown every night.
But like how in that 3 or 4 year period of the process, they averaged 67 losses. Is that was in the story? I can't remember.
And you know, I think that was one of the areas I started with Brian, which was the first thing he did when he became a professional sports owner pretty quickly. I mean, people forget they bought the team. And then that year Philly was actually eighth and they kind of caught the Bulls when Derrick Rose got hurt. Remember?
Yeah.
So they actually advanced in the playoffs that year a little bit, ran into the Celtics and lost, but
They traded for Andrew Bynum. They were like, okay, well, now we're going to try to go for it. And that obviously blew up in their face.
Yeah.
But then he went into full process. He didn't go into full process the minute he bought the team.
Right. But the biggest issue a lot of people had with the process is just the lack of it was a pretty radical idea at the time. I mean, I've called it YOLO tanking, you know, in the past. Like, and Sam Hinkie was the architect of this, and Josh Harris being from private equity, and David Blitzer being from private equity. It just made sense. Like, when you buy a distressed asset, what do? Strip down the parts that don't work and rebuild the company by keeping the most valuable parts. Well, the most valuable parts the Sixers had back then were draft picks. And the highest draft picks generally net out the best talent. There's a lot of, you've written a lot about this, the history of the process. I think probably the best story, you know, Pablo Torre has written about this, you know, and kind of named it that. But I think there wasn't a lot of Josh Harris explaining what's going on here. There wasn't a lot of yearly or monthly or whatever you want to call it, owner press conferences where there's some level of accountability for this. And it got to the point in the league where it became uncomfortable. Like the NBA steps in. There became, you know, Jerry Colangelo took a advisory role at one point. Remember, that's kind of how Brian got the job.
More than kind of. That's how he got the job.
Right. And, you know, it became uncomfortable to the point where then there's the Martin Luther-esque missive that Sam Hinkie writes on his way out.
What a reference.
Yeah.
Stanford reference.
Yeah.
The Martin Luther's 95 theses. Oh, my God.
It's
Jackson, do you know the reference to Martin Luther? I'm just kidding. Jackson went to Syracuse. I'm sure he does. Yeah. I'm sure he does. He went to Syracuse.
But, like, there wasn't a lot of forward-facing ownership time during that period. And I think they made certain mistakes. I mean, here's a cutting room floor story for you, Brian. Remember back when they at one point decided, you know, we should probably get some veterans in here so that we don't just have a bunch of guys, like some things that happened with some of the young players, some off the court stuff. So Elton Brand's like going to retire, and to the point where he had a vacation booked, and like they call him and go, hey, you know, we really could use you here. And it just as a veteran, and, you know, we have some young guys that could use some mentorship. I think they were thinking of Okafor and Nerlens Noel and those guys. And Elton's like, I literally have my off-season trip to Jamaica booked. Like, I can't do that to my family. Like, we've been planning on me retiring. We have this trip booked. I can't be to training camp. And they go, can you come after training camp? Can you just come? Can you come later? Whatever it was. I don't know if it's training camp or in the middle of the season or whatever it was. Can you come later? And he goes, if you let me go on the trip, yeah. Okay. I'll show up for you guys, because Elton wanted a role in the front office eventually, you know, and he did. Right. That was the team that I think won 9 games. That was Joel's rookie year. But like, this was that process era Sixers was, now I think everybody does it, right? There's a lot of teams that are doing it, and they just do it a little.
Yeah. They just don't, go whole hog with 67 loss average for 4 years. But so it's very clear that Josh Harris he's taking a different approach and a more public approach.
Yeah.
So you've written this Harden story. So this Harden story hadn't run yet because you had quotes from him in your Harden story. So the Harden thing is unfolding. had Daryl Morey is a liar. Had that come out?
Yeah.
Okay.
That came out. I sat with everyone while I was there. Like, I saw Tad Brown was there and Josh Harris.
Tad Brown's
was there,
the team president of the.
Yeah. And, I don't think Daryl was there. Obviously Daryl wasn't there for the Commanders game. Why would he be there? But, but there was a sort of like James Harden had just blown them up. Right. I mean, he had just gone to China, said what he said twice. Right. Let me repeat myself in case you didn't hear me the first time, which is kind of the best part of that whole thing. and let me say it again. And it was very uncomfortable. Like, it was very uncomfortable for a couple of weeks there for Daryl Morey, for everyone involved in the Sixers and that whole process with James, and hasn't really gotten more comfortable. I don't think it's gotten more comfortable. I mean, there's the photos from the club last week where he's, you know, there's signs saying the same thing. And
Joel
and
took, I think, processing out of his Twitter bio or X bio.
You never know. There's always something
he's
with Joel
Embiid. I know.
Yeah. Like, he's always just, you know, doing stuff, poking, right? That's what the Joel is.
Yeah.
But we, you know, this was all happening during that period. And so I did ask him about it quite a bit. And I mean, ran some quotes from him in the story on James Harden. And, you know, as a reporter, it's like, you're doing two different things. Like, you have to get everything while you're there. like you have to. Okay, so I'm going to ask you about Apollo, and I'm going to ask you about the Commanders, and I'm going to ask you about the Sixers. And
Apollo is his private equity company that he had an acrimonious departure from. I'm just filling in details. I'm like doing the footnotes. So.
I know. It's good. So yeah, it was, you know, he did. He didn't duck any of those questions. If anything, I think he was pretty candid on James Harden. I think it's, I don't remember off the top of my head, but it was something to the effect of, it's a really unfortunate situation and we hope we can find a resolution for both. That's good for both us and James. And, you know, I think he signaled this understanding of like, we're going to look for a deal. I mean, the same thing Daryl Morey has said publicly, we're going to look for a deal, but it has to be good for us and for James.
Yeah. And so I don't know 100%, you know, we're recording this pod on Sunday night. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't. I wish I could say, my sources have told me that James Harden will show up at 10:04 a.m. Like I don't know. I've heard all kinds of different things. I've heard enough conflicting pieces of information to say that I don't know as we sit here right now.
So I'll give you my line that I used on the show the other day. Okay. Everyone has a theory. No one has an answer.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. So
I think most people I've spoken to in and around the Harden situation and in Philly, et cetera, I think they all think James is going to show up because the theory is, and like I say, the theory is that he wants to get paid. Like he's not going to Ben Simmons this and say, I'm going to lose $19 million of salary by not showing up. I think there's this idea that he will show up and become just more than a distraction than he already is. More of a distraction.
Yeah,
or he will just go up and they'll work out to that he just doesn't play because he says, I don't want to be here.
Yeah. The other thing is like, obviously last time he showed up late. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how uncomfortable he's going to make it. I do know that now that the Holiday and Lillard things have been settled, and while there'd be a lot of attention on Monday in Milwaukee and in Boston, Philly is where the action is going to be on Monday and Tuesday, even maybe and Wednesday. That's where the action is now going to be. That's the last sort of hot spot. And, you know, you've written so much about this story this summer, and it's very clear from reading your reporting. Last season was very complicated. This summer was very complicated. It is not simple. And, you know, Harden was obviously wounded by the way he was treated, as he said, and Harden kind of wounded the Sixers a little bit. And so I don't know if they can come together or not. It's a real question mark.
It's a real question mark. And I also think I don't think it's gets solved in a day. I think like it's funny how like things can go on an entire summer and these just sort of forced deadlines and opportunities. Like it is media day on Monday. And so therefore everybody has to play a card. Like you just are forced to play a hand. You can't just pass on to the next day, to the next day. And this is how these things eventually get resolved, is that something now has to happen because your contract kicks in and you either show up and report and, or you don't, and then they pay you or they don't pay you. I mean, that's literally what happens now. And so we'll see. It's he's already been fined, obviously, by the NBA for his comments. I would, my guess, this is my theory, not an answer, but my theory is that he shows up and says, I don't want to be here. And then they either say, well, let's suit up and go through practice, or they say, all right, why don't you just sit out until you do want to be here, or we have a trade for you. I think like that, because I think he's not the type to just not show up. Yeah. Technically within the rules.
Well, it's against the new rules that allegedly.
Yeah.
The interesting thing that you had in the story about Josh Harris, you interviewed David Blitzer, who is his co-owner with a number of the teams, and you interviewed Michael Rubin, who was a previous part owner of the 76ers. He sold it. He's the founder CEO of Fanatics. I guess there's been people like this over the course of the decades, but like is the man about town, hosts the party every summer.
The Great Gatsby. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. And he had some very interesting quotes to talk about Josh Harris. And I think Michael Rubin, if he could ever talk freely, could have an incredible insight into this Harden situation. I suspect his role is very important because he is extremely close to James Harden, at least has been. I don't know where he's at with the Sixers
people. I'll say this. I did, obviously, I talked to Michael Rubin for this story on Josh. We talked about a lot of things Sixers as well. He's not involved with them anymore, and he says he doesn't, you know, I'm glad I'm not dealing with this anymore. That was a lot. But I think there is a he would have played a role in this that could have been helpful to fixing the situation. Like there's a sort of connective tissue that Michael Rubin had with James Harden just because of their long history together. I think, you know, let's say you play this out. The reason Rubin has to divest himself of the Sixers is because Fanatics is getting involved in gambling. And it's against it's going to be a conflict of interest for him to be an owner in the team and gambling. And it just got too
murky. But he also, with Fanatics, needed to do a bunch of deals with players.
Correct.
For his business. And as an owner of a team, he couldn't do business with players, or he was very limited in what
That's
he could
do. That's right. They have, sort of player appearance fees. Like there's a lot of players that are on the payroll for Fanatics. And that's why his events are so exclusive, because people are, they're not just his friend. They're part of the company, right? They're endorsers. And I think that became problematic. And so he divests himself from the Sixers, and he still maintains a relationship with James Harden, but he's not involved in the actual contracts. He's not involved in any of the team business. And I think if you had a Michael Rubin there, maybe throughout this year, it might've been different. I really do. I think the handholding that probably needed to happen would have been done. That's partially why James drifted so far and feels so betrayed, because there was no one holding his hand. And you know, Sixers will tell you, well, we can't hold his hand. That's tampering. Right. That's right. That's true. They got fined last year for tampering, but there's a handholding that could have happened all throughout the year in just making somebody feel safe and secure. And the biggest takeaway I had from the Harden story, and I think I can say this very, very bluntly, which is James felt like he sacrificed a lot on and off the court to prove that he was all about winning, that this is what the team needed. And when it came time for him to be repaid for that sacrifice, he was not being repaid. And that is reflected in not making an all-star team. That's reflected in the sort of stature he has on the team and in and around the league, all NBA voting and those kinds of things. It wasn't his quote-unquote sacrifice. It's a former MVP, top 75 player. This is somebody who has a lot that they're proud of in their career. And when let's pick a different player who takes a much lesser role on a team and makes that sacrifice, like all year long, that's talked about, right? That's brought up, and they're made to feel good about that. And James didn't feel that way. And he never got to the point. And Brian, you've talked about this very well, and I think you're right about this. He probably had more leverage if he did not pick up his player option, because they need him just as much as he needs them. And because he picked that up, I think he's lost a lot of leverage here.
Well, one thing I suspect could happen in the next couple of days, we'll see. Now that Dame Lillard has been traded and is not a Clipper, and now that Drew Holiday has been traded and is not a Clipper, and Malcolm Brogdon is now very available, and the Clippers almost traded for him. But so that's there, but like the Clippers have tried to get all those players this year. They tried to get Brogdon.
So
they tried
Heat,
to get Lillard.
I
don't know about the Heat trying to get Brogdon, but the Heat tried to get Lillard.
Drew
and
Holiday
tried to get,
and
tried
Dame,
to get Holiday. Yeah. But the Clippers potentially, now that they have sort of clarity of situation, I suppose the Clippers could come back to the Sixers and renegotiate now that they kind of know who's going to be available and who's not. And the other thing is the Clippers, from what I understand, made a pretty aggressive offer for Drew Holiday. James Harden would come cheaper for a number of reasons, but primarily because his contract is so up in the air and he can't extend. That's one thing that I will watch in the next, you know, week is could the Clippers and the Sixers get something going there? And it would behoove Harden, I think, maybe not to make more negative news. That may make it a little easier to get that trade. And I wonder if anybody's given him that or he's aware of that or whatever. And by the way, like they might talk again and they may not come to anything, but because the Clippers are now kind of back out there.
Yeah.
I would probably just advise him to play it low key to make that type of move easier, but I'm not 100% sure it'll go down. I'm dancing around.
I think the Clippers are still very interested in James Harden, but I don't think their talks really went very far with Philly.
No, they didn't.
And I would phrase it a different way. Like I think Philly highly values James Harden. Like they are willing to trade him, but the value they have on James Harden is still very high, because they've always valued him very highly. And I don't think they see him as a distressed asset. I don't think they see him as a problem they're trying to get rid of. I think their druthers would probably be, well, he comes back and plays for us. I mean, they'll entertain the idea of a trade for him because he's asked for that, but they don't see him as like, oh, we're just going to take a first and be done with it. You know, I think they still place they're not going to just let him go for nothing. And so the Clippers are probably in a place where they play it. I think they play it out and they let it sit for a while, whether mm-hmm. that's a month or two, maybe even into January. Cause I think that's their leverage is, you know, the longer this goes, James needs to play. He needs to show that he can still play, and he needs to, and also just everybody needs some resolution. It, in a way, it reminds me a bit of Westbrook last year. Right, where we can't really all find a team that I think Harden is still a more effective player in the scene. Yeah, more effective player in the league. Okay, I don't want to compare them.
It is
he led the league in assists last year, right?
No, it is definitely like this the stumbling block that was blocking the Lakers. And I don't know, Harden is not a stumbling block in the way he plays, but the situation is a stumbling block.
Yeah,
so that's where they're different. Yeah. So but, the other thing that's gonna be interesting on Monday is what Joel has to say. Now, you've written extensively about Joel over the years. You have a good feel for him, as good as anybody in the media. Joel has probably thought long and hard about how he's going to handle this media day and the stance that he's going to take even going forward after media day. To me, while the actual action with Harden, is he there? Is he not there? Is he playing hard? Is he, say, he's got a sore knee or sore back or whatever? Yeah. That is fascinating, yet what the actual actions are. But to me, the more important thing to hear is what Embiid says.
Even if he
passes the buck and is like, I just work here, I don't remember what his number is. I'm employee number 7. Even that will be telling. So to me, I think Embiid sitting on the podium is fascinating as well.
Yeah, and Joel Embiid press conferences are always very entertaining. I mean, he's had all summer to think about it. He's done one or two interviews. He got married. He had a lot going on this summer. If I were guessing, I would say he gives a very down the middle answer of like, James is a great player. We really want him back on our team. You know, I don't want to get involved in other people's business. And, you know, I know he feels the way he feels, but we would welcome him back. You know, that would be my guess of what either Joel and or everyone else is going to say, some version of that. Right. I don't want to get involved in other people's business, but, you know, we would like him back. That's the general feeling around this team, which is I think if James said, I'm ready to go, let's go. My problem was with Darryl. We'll put that aside. Let's go ball. Let's hoop. I think everybody would be fine. I really do. I think he'd be welcome back. I mean, Nick Nurse has no history with him. I mean, he has good history with him, actually, from Houston. You know, I don't know how much their paths crossed with the G League team and the Rio Grande Vipers, right? But Nick was around that the Rockets teams during James's glory days. So I think he'd be fine if James came in with that attitude. But I don't know. the pictures of the club the other day, that kind of lets you know where his head was.
Yeah, that was a salvo. That was like a salvo. And I don't know if it was like, I don't know what to make of it, to be honest with you. But I don't think we'll have clarity on Monday either. But we have a idea of the way the game is going to be played.
I think we're going to be checking it. Did he get on the plane to Colorado? Did he show up in media day? I think he
may take his own plane to Colorado. As you wrote about, he sometimes likes to take his own plane places. Yeah.
I don't know if it's his plane or he gets somebody else's plane, you know, ride on somebody else.
It's not far from Colorado, relatively. It's not far from Colorado to Vegas. It's certainly closer than Philadelphia. So
you could drive it probably.
Well, I don't know if you could drive it. It would be a very long drive. You're showing your coastal geography there, Ramona. I'm so sorry.
I know, probably true. But I do know the drive from Vegas to St. George, Utah is not as close as I think it is, because that's where we used to fly into when we go play a tournament there. It's a couple hours. So Denver's a whole nother couple hours.
You fly to St. George and then drive to
No, we would fly into Vegas and drive to St. George. Oh, to
St. George. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, that makes sense. I was like, wait a minute, you would fly. Okay, I didn't get it. But yes, the desert is expansive. Before we go, I wanted to ask you how you think, what your impressions of Josh Harris were when you were done with him, because there's a lot of fascinating things in this story. He talks about the private equity deal, and I'm not going to talk about that on a basketball podcast, but he talks about the private equity deal that basically made him a billionaire. He talks about his breakup with his, which like they could make a movie about, maybe somebody will, about his former business partner who's, you know, been in negative headlines because of it. I don't think he'd ever talked about that before, that he talked about it with you. There's a lot of stuff in this story that is very fascinating, and it happened at the start of the NFL season. There was a lot going on, and if you missed it, I would try to go back and check it out, because I loved so much of the story. There was a part in the story where Michael Rubin says that purchasing the Sixers for $280 million. Just think about that.
Yeah.
The Bobcats sold to Michael Jordan for $300 million. And like within a year of that, the Sixers, the Philadelphia 76ers sold for $280. Okay.
Yeah.
And Michael Rubin was saying that it took 6 months to do the deal, and it was way more difficult, and they were on the fence about buying the Sixers than they were about buying the Commanders.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to know what your takeaway of Josh Harris was, and what you think maybe we can say about where the Sixers are headed, the way he's handling this right now.
So I think he's learned a lot, and he's been very humbled in his last 12 years as an owner. He said that a number of times, and not because I asked. It came from within. I think he's learned a lot about how important it is to have personal relationships with players, for them to feel like you actually care about them and you don't just see them as an asset and part of your strategy or something. And so he's really gone out of his way to make personal connections with the guys in the Commanders. And I know he's done that with Joel Embiid and some other players in the Sixers. That's something I think he's learned over these 12 years. There was a quote there. It's like, you know, you got to do everything, like in sports, it's really leaky. You know, everything, you got to do everything like you're going to read about it on the front page of the newspaper tomorrow. And
the way you had it was that his mother, right? His mother used to say to him.
Yeah. And I think he.
Well, hold on. I want you to tell them. His mother
used
to say to him, you should behave like what you do is going to be on the front page of the paper.
That's right.
And then he kind of, he grew up and did a whole bunch of, made a billionaire, which, you know, was in the business pages.
Many times over, yeah.
But then when actually became the owner of the 76ers, what he did was on the front page of the paper.
Yeah.
And it took a while to kind of compute what that meant.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to the story that I liked of, you know, I watched the show Billions, so I enjoy that, that, not that I ever travel in those circles. Like, I'm not in those circles. I'm just kind of writing stories about people in those circles, but I like the,
literally traveled in those circles when you've been on private planes with billionaires writing stories. So I know what you were saying, but you actually have literally traveled in those circles.
Yeah, but I'm not, there's a B in my last name, but it's not for billions. Okay? Like, there's a, you know, like I know how to talk to them without getting embarrassed, or like I can hang in that conversation, but I'm certainly not, you know, having any kind of,
I understand. I'm teasing you a little bit.
But anyway, what I liked about the, you know, I liked when David Blitzer was telling me the story of how he and Josh Harris talked about sports one day, and they were at a pub in London, and I go, which pub? And he goes, oh, I can see it. I can picture it. I'm going to have to remember exactly which pub it was. And I go, you got to tell me which pub it was. It matters. It's an important detail. He goes, okay. So he texts me back later and he goes, it was the Punch Bowl. And I go, oh, okay. Because this is an important pub in London. This is like Guy Ritchie and Madonna's pub. This is not, yeah. This is not just like any old, ye old English pub. Right? This is, this is like an iconic pub that's been open since 1750. So this is where these two billionaires get together. And you have to picture this, like, this is the basketball equivalent of the meetings between Red Auerbach and Jerry Buss at Dantana's in Winning Time, right? Like these are Josh Harris from Apollo and David Blitzer from Blackstone, which are huge rivals in private equity.
Yeah, it's like I don't know, if it's not Lakers Celtics, it's, you know, Celtics 76ers.
Okay.
You know, it's a real old standing, you know, they have a lot of, they're intertwined in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because when you're calling a place like Blackstone, okay, if you're calling a private equity firm, like David Blitzer ends up handling the Dodgers sale when Frank McCourt sold to the Guggenheim Group, Blackstone handles the sale. They're the banker there, and then sometimes they're buying somebody, sometimes they're being the banker, sometimes they're on the other side. That's what private equity firms do, and so he sees up close like the value in sports. Back in the 2010s, basically that sale, but also when they buy the Sixers. And I love the quote where he says, my only regret is that we got two teams. We got the hockey team and the basketball team, but that we didn't buy more because the value of sports teams. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't buy more. Except you said it about the, you know, $400 stock you bought, not the $400 million basketball team. And it's they saw that, you know, these private equity guys, they didn't buy into sports because it was a great buy. They bought into sports because they're giant sports fans and they happened to think that it was a good buy. Right. And this is like, it's going to sound, this is an oversimplification, but this is kind of the way I felt that when you make your huge fortune, like when you make your first million, I'm sure you go buy something nice. And then when you make your first billion, you go buy something nicer. Okay. And Josh Harris had just made like his first billion right around then. That's when they do the big deal with Leondel Blassel, which is it's a Dutch chemical company. What you need to know, the reason why they make so much money is this is the 2010 financial crisis. The whole world economy is shutting down. All these companies are undervalued. This company has a competitive advantage in fracking, okay, in natural gas refining. And they produce some plastics that are basically make everything, that make the world go round. And this company is a very good company that's going into bankruptcy. And Josh Harris knows, like, hey, even though this company is going bankrupt, it's still a really valuable company because of what it can do in terms of natural gas refining and the applications of that. I think it's being totally undervalued because of the economy and because of other circumstances. So he's buying Citigroup stock for 20 cents on the dollar. He's buying stock in this company for just nothing. Like he's taking on debt.
He bought their debt. And
yeah,
I know this is an NBA podcast, but he bought so much of their debt that he basically
owned the company.
Was able to take control of the company. Yeah. Basically, is what happened. Yeah, and then, like a year or two later, the company went like 10x in value.
The easiest way to say it is they invested about $2 billion, and it became worth $12 billion within 5 years. It's a pretty good return. Yeah. Like 600% return. And so this is about the same time that he's like, I have money now, like to not just, I probably with his first million, he bought a house or a car. And with your first billion, you buy a team. Okay. Yeah. So, but buying a team is a huge thing. And it wasn't, I think that Sixers deal is an even better deal than what's been reported because I think they took on a lot of debt. I think it was only about half in equity. And then they took on a lot of debt and then they, you know, they eventually get more out of this even still. Now the Sixers are valued at $3 billion by Forbes. So
no. Pretty good. I mean, with all due respect to Forbes,
I think it'll be more.
The Suns just sold for four. The Sixers are worth more than that.
four or five at least.
Yeah.
But, you know, so anyway, the point is, the vibe I got from Josh Harris was, and it was like a funny lead. I mean, you do this because it's the lead to your story, but also because it kind of explains the guy and who he is. I got to go to the Monday Night Football booth and I had to kind of get clearance. You know, I emailed a producer and I said, hey, you know, I'm doing a story with this guy. I'm following him around all day. I promise I won't be a distraction. I'll just kind of stand in there and watch him do his interview. And I'm standing in the back and I notice Joe Buck is quite a bit taller than you think he is. Troy Aikman is 6'4". And Josh Harris is listed at 5'8". We'll just say listed at 5'8". And so when they do the shot and, you know, the football press box, you got to stand. You could sit on those director's chairs.
Yeah.
Better to stand
the
whole game.
Yeah. Yeah. The field is always in the background and you're. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, 5'8" and then 6'1", 6'4", like that shot's going to be uneven. And so the producer's like, do you ask the guy who just spent $6 billion to stand on a box? I mean, they ask me to do that all the time because I'm 5'2". I'm like, I'm used to it. But
yes, you know, I've been asked to stand on boxes.
Yeah.
It's happened.
I mean, you know, we're short. That's how it goes. I mean, you're not as short as I am, but anyway,
I'm not tall. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. So they just ask, like, they just go, you know, you want to stand on the box? And Josh, without like, doesn't even give it a second thought. Like, yeah, sure. Whatever you need me to do, stands on the box. And I have like a couple photos from behind the scenes of this. Cause it was a really memorable thing that I thought he did. And there's also, if you had done some reading on Dan Snyder, his predecessor in Washington, there's a lot of things about
another
Washington
man
Post
who was
other
not
people,
tall,
not tall. And he was sensitive about that and didn't like you to point that out. And so this was like, you
Sorry,
could feel
Dan.
all the commander's employees, like watching this unfold going, oh my God, is he going to stand on the box? Like, is he going to, oh, okay, sit on the box. All right, we're good. Right? And so I sort of saw this humility there. And then, of course, there's the handshake that was not a handshake heard around the world, where Joe Buck is talking with his hands and Josh Harris sees a hand out of the corner of his eye and goes in for the shake, but that's not what was happening. Yeah. And Joe Buck is like, pulls his hand back. And Josh Harris goes, okay. And then Aikman sort of slyly laughs. It's really,
well, it's the thing, like, you know, $10 billion can't make you cool.
No. And, but what was so funny about that whole thing is that I don't think he had any idea that that went viral until he walked off the set. Like, I think it was just a thing that happened where, like, you and I do that all the time. Like, I don't even think he recognized that I don't know if I would have either. Cause you're in the middle of talking. He just kept talking. And afterwards, Dave Schaller, who's their PR guy, said, you know, you thought you did the interview really well, except this one funny moment. And then he shows him the clip. And like, you can just see that moment, like, oh, like, how's he going to react to going viral for something awkward? And he just laughs it off. He was just like, oh, let me see it again. And I just thought that was funny. Like, here's a guy who's just not precious about things like that. You know, we already had the joke about the, do you want some makeup for your photo ops? And he's like, yeah, it doesn't help at my age. I mean, it's, you know, like, there's a sort of humility to him, even though he has this stature now in the sports world that I think is,
well, I think he wants to show, show it a little bit, but he is he's a killer in business.
Oh,
that I will, you know, tell you. All right. Well, we'll see, Ramona, what happens over the next 24 to 48 hours with the Sixers. And I know that it's NFL
okay,
season.
Okay, we're
going to
go word of the day. How about word of the day? Okay, so I'm going to give you a prompt and say, and you give me a word. What happens with the Sixers over the next 24 to 48 hours? What's your word? You know, Perk's word
of
the day.
What's the opposite of clarity? Opaque? Opacity?
Obfuscation.
I'm not going to obfuscate. Well, they're going to obfuscate. No, I'll say opacity.
I'm going to say theatrics. I'm going to go with theatrics is my word.
Okay. I like it. I look forward to your. I'll look forward to you.
I'm Bontemps and McMahon for a word too.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm sure McMahon knows what theatrics is, especially. I'm sure he doesn't know what opacity means, but
or obfuscation.
Definitely,
there's
not.
No chance.
Definitely not. All right, thanks, Ramona, and go check out
Bye,
that
Brian.
Story. Talk to you. But before we go, just want to let you know we're going to do a special Hoop Collective that's going to publish on Tuesday. With all of our reporters who were at media days around the country on Monday. It's going to be meaty. It's going to be meaty. Definitely going to be getting Mr. Bontemps from Philadelphia. That's going to be That's going to be a good one. And people,
who knows what's happening here.
So thank you for listening to Hoop Collective. We will be talking to you very soon. Probably too much content for this this early in the week, but what can I say? Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you soon. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Oh, I thought I was coming back to do that.
We've come back. We've come back. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Adios, amigos. Spare me your frustration.
The magic of editing.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.